mai básica es esta. That is why the among the mental factors which must be present in each and every moment of cognition, you also find adimokkha, determination. You find smriti, sati. You find the mati, which is the equivalent to wisdom or ditti, to differentiation of the object. These dhammas are not qualified as the sabbacitta sadharana, as the mental factors always present in each and every moment of cognition in Theravada. And we shall see, I hope you will see very clearly why. Because the Theravada is analyzing the cognition process step by step, not as a sudden arising and a sudden disappearance in each and every moment of cognition. So it is a sequence. This idea of sequence also will come later in the Sarvastivada tradition, for example in the Sautrantika, famous the famous book is studied especially in the Chinese tradition. They also describe, this Sautrantikas also have the mental process, but not so detailed like the Theravada. So they also slightly change the sabbacitta sadharana, the cetasikas, which appear in each and every moment of cognition. Then you come to the Vijnanavadins. The Vijnanavadins are, as we have said, they differ from the other traditions, that for them, instead of one mind, we get three kinds of mind. The alaya, the manas, and the pravritti vijnanas, the six normal, they call them pravritti vijnanas. They are applied to the differentiation of the object. And this differentiation of the object is only done for them. The base of pravritti vijnanas, the base of the cognitions active in differentiation of the object, is manas. And the base of manas and the base of pravritti vijnanas is alaya vijnana. So their way of meditation and their way of this distinction among the different chittas and different cetasikas is also different due to this principle of alaya vijnana. So for them, instead of the 10 mental factors common to all cognition in the Sarvastivadin system, the 7 mental factors common to all cognition in Theravada system, they have only 5 mental factors common to all cognition. These are the mental factors of the Alaya Vijnana. And because the Alaya Vijnana is the base of all cognition, and the Alaya Vijnana is then connected with only 5 mental factors. Not with concentration, as we have seen in the Theravada or in the Sarvastivada. Why? Because according to them, according to Sarvastivada, according to Theravada, the mind can only have 1 object. It is not possible for a mind to have more than 1 object. But because Alaya Vijnana is a base of all the phenomena, inner and outer, it is that which appropriates one's body and appropriates the world. Therefore, it can have not only 1 object, but it can have many objects. So, just like 1 wave can appear, also 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or even up to 6 waves can appear all together. So they do not need for mental process to take place. They do not need necessarily concentration, because whenever there is concentration, one can concentrate only on 1 single object. As we have seen, the rasa, the function, or the taste of concentration is that it sahajatanam sampindana. Sahajatanam sampindana means that it molds together in the mind all the other mental factors appearing at the same moment of cognition. Because of this quality of samadhi or of concentration, the mind can only appear in regard to 1 object. It cannot appear in regard to 2 objects or 3 objects or 4 objects at the same time. It is not possible. So it is very important to understand this principle. In the Theravada, therefore, samadhi, especially with this function of molding the mental factors appearing in the same condition together, not letting them disperse, this power of mind of putting the mental factors in the same condition together is a necessary prerequisite, necessary condition for any cognition, any moment of cognition. It is very important to understand when you study the Northern Buddhism and Southern Buddhism to see this difference. So the difference between the different schools of Abhidhamma, at present we have only works of the three schools of Abhidhamma, of the Vaibhashika, of the Yogacara, and of the Theravada. The Madhyamika cannot be strictly taken as the Abhidhamma school because they are concerned with rather the breaking the idea of self-existence than with the detailed analysis of the mental processes and of the objects of mental processes as other Abhidhamma schools do. There is of course there are some special works especially appearing in the Chinese Tipitaka like Sariputta, Abhidhamma and so on which are not allied to any schools that we know, but these are exceptions. All the major works of the Abhidhamma that we have are either allied to the Sarvastivada or to Yogacara or to Theravada. So the study of the three systems of Abhidhamma, if you want to really understand them, and is in a way directly connected, their way of analysis is directly connected to their meditation practice. If we have time later, sometime we can talk more about it, but for the present moment, because we want to understand one system thoroughly, but you should keep it in mind for the further study of Abhidhamma when you want to go deeply into that field and get, so you should keep this in mind. When we have some time in the future, we will again return to this subject. But now we return to our main subject matter, that is the Theravada Abhidhamma. If you study any other system, you will only get clarity when you know one system thoroughly. If you don't know one system thoroughly and you start mixing all these systems together, you cannot expect to get good results. So best way is to start to learn thoroughly one system. Once you have done so, then you can appreciate really other systems. So we come back to our last week analysis, and we have started, as I have pointed out, not in accordance with the order of the book that we are analyzing, but in accordance with how the subject matter is presented in the living tradition of Abhidhamma. We have specially emphasized that Barma, as far as I am aware, and I have tried to do all kinds of research in that field, as far as I am aware, this living tradition of Abhidhamma is completely, it's preserved in its entirety only in Barma. We get only fragmentary knowledge of this of Abhidhamma as a living tradition in Tibet and in China. Not to speak about Japan and Vietnam and other countries related to the Chinese tradition. So we have started with analyzing the Mahagata Chitta, the sublime cognitions, which are the sublime cognitions. You still remember? I hope you remember. How many sublime conditions are there? How many sublime cognitions are there? 5 sublime cognitions in the Rupa Vachara sphere, in the sphere of cognition where subtle Rupa is the object of cognizing. Then the other are the 4 formless cognitions. So all together, according to the Abhidhamma system, we have 9 types of cognitions, which are called Mahagata, sublime. Why are they called sublime? Because their mind in them and the object of cognition in them is sublime. It is very important to understand. Unless you understand it very clearly, you will not get any further in Abhidhamma. The cognition is the interdependent phenomena, interdependent. So what does it mean, interdependent phenomena? It means that the gross mind cannot contemplate a subtle object. Only subtle mind can contemplate the subtle object. That means in these different levels of cognition, only the higher cognition can contemplate the object corresponding to that cognition plus the lower or grosser objects, but it cannot contemplate the more subtle objects. The more subtle the mind, the more subtle the object becomes. This is the very important to understand. And the more subtle the object, the more appeased the mind. So it means that the mind becomes the learning. This sublime mind is learning step by step the more and more appeased condition of mind by understanding the more and more sublime objects. Now, what is the main mental factor which makes the mind and the mental object sublime? We have specially emphasized it is nothing else but the one-pointedness of mind, ekagata. So the more subtle the object, the more one-pointed and sharp the mind becomes. So the subtler the object, the more one-pointed the mind becomes. It is very important to understand. And in this process of, we will see later, now I just only mention this, when we come, when we speak about the cognition of the, in the rupa-vachara plane, in the plane of cognition dominated by subtle objects, the process of sublimating the mind and the object is a process of removing the so-called 8 apalakshas, Pali apalakhas. Apalakhas are the hindrances to a completely appeased cognition. So you should now know something about the 8 apalakshas and how. So the sublimating cognition and its object in the rupa-vachara plane of cognition, in the cognition dominated by subtle objects. This cognition is sublimated by removing these 8 apalakshas. In the arupa, in the 4 kinds of arupa cognitions, then the still more subtle cognition is then sublimated step by step by having a more and more subtle object. The mind in the arupa cognitions remains always the same. Its mental factors do not change. Only the objects become more and more sublimated. But in the rupa-vachara cognition, in the cognition dominated by subtle objects, the mind especially is more and more sublimated. The object of the rupa-vachara cognition is sublimated only in regard to the sublimation of the mind, not in regard to the sublimation of the object so much. But in the arupa-vachara, the mind remained the same. It is sublimation is only in regard to the object. Mind remains the same. It means same, not as far as quality of the one-pointedness is concerned, but as far as the quality of the mental factor is concerned, this is the difference. So what are the 8 apalakshas? The first is the applied thought, vitaka. This vitaka is removed when? Removed in the second rupa vachara absorption. So in this second rupa vachara absorption, then you have, instead of 5, causes of absorption, you have only 4 causes of absorption. The applied thought does not exist anymore. Then, in the third absorption, you have the sustained thought which disappears. Okay, never mind. There is a very famous story in the commentary of the Dhammapada, I will tell you now, which there were 3 disciples of the Buddha, and the Buddha was having a discourse to them. So the 3 disciples, they were listening to the discourse of the Buddha. One of them, he was listening to the discourse with great pleasure and with full attentiveness, with a full concentration. The other one, while listening to the discourse of Buddha, he was grabbing the ground all the time, digging the ground with his hand. And the other one, while listening to the discourse of Buddha, he was always catching the branches of the tree under which they were sitting. So, what happened after the Buddha has finished the discourse? Then the one disciple who was listening very carefully, he got the clarity and he was beaming, shining in his face with Dhamma Ruchi, the Dhamma pleasure, Dhamma satisfaction. The other two, they were just having without expression in their face. And Ananda, who was listening behind, he heard this and he asked the Buddha, "What is the reason why the other, the one who was listening carefully, he is beaming, the other two, they don't have any impression at all?" And the Buddha said, Buddha smiled and said, "The one who was listening carefully, he had many, many merits accumulated in past life, and now after this I talk this discourse for him, especially now after hearing this discourse he has come to enlightenment, so he's beaming with Dhamma Ruchi. The other one who was always digging the earth while I was speaking, he has been, in his previous lives, he has been earthworm for earthworm for, and he was earthworm for many, many lives. That is his habit. So because of that habit, he was not able to catch anything. The other one, he was catching the branches. He has been a monkey for the past 100 lives. That is his habit of always catching the tree branches, so he could not catch anything also, because his monkey habit is so strong. So snake? Is it so? Oh, you remember better than me. That is a Dhammapada commentary. Okay, so never mind. Someone listens carefully, someone listens not. Never mind. We don't worry about that. Everybody according to his ability. So coming back to our subject, then in the second absorption, the applied thought disappears. In the third absorption, the sustained thought disappears. In the Suttanta tradition, they disappear together, but in Abhidhamma tradition, because Abhidhamma, as we have said, the Abhi of Abhidhamma means special in the sense of belonging to special people, and in the sense of detail, more specialized. So in the Abhidhamma tradition, we differentiate. Instead of four usual absorptions in the Suttanta, we get five. Then what are the other apalakshas, what are the other hindrances to a perfect sublime state of mind? The other four are dukkha, domanasa, sukha, somanasa. Domanasa disappears in the first jhana already. There is no place for it. Dukkha disappears in the second jhana, in the third jhana, according to the Abhidhamma system, the third jhana, according to the Suttanta system, in the second jhana. And the sukha, somanasa, then disappear in the fifth jhana, together with in-breath and out-breath. So, starting from the end, in-breath, out-breath, sukha, somanasa, dukkha, domanasa, vitaka, vichara, applied thought and sustained thought. These are the 8 hindrances, apalakshas, of the perfect sublime state of mind. These 8 apalakshas then disappear in the 5th. Absorption of the Rupa Vachara sphere. Then, in the absorptions of the formless sphere, the mind also is the same as the mind of the 5th absorption. Only the object becomes more and more sublime, and the concentration becomes more and more clear, more and more sharp, till the sharpest concentration is in the Nevasanyana Asanya, is connected with the most sublime object one can experience in this world. This sublime object and the sublime cognition are called the top of the world, because there is no sublime mind and sublime object of cognition more sublime than that. So we will connect our analysis of the mental factors with these minds first, because these minds are these cognitions are the cognitions which are studied first in the living tradition of Abhidhamma. Due to the detailed study of these mental factors and mind in these conditions, then one will be able to undergo also a very detailed and thorough study of the lower cognitions in the Kama Vachara sphere, in the sphere dominated by sense objects, and also in the highest cognition, in the super mundane cognition. So we have started with the first absorption in the Rupa Vachara, in the first lowest cognition, in the sphere of cognitions dominated by subtle objects, the first jhana. And we have pointed out the 5 jhana angas, that enable that cognition. Without these 5 jhana angas being prominent, it is not possible to attain the cognition of the subtle objects. So these, because these mental factors are very, very prominent and very, very clear, therefore it is very easy for the meditators who have stabilized their minds in the first absorption to see them. we have already given the hint how they see them. Because in all absorptions, the dhyana or samapati is different from the normal mind we are using. That the object of absorption does not change, remain the same during long, long time, as long as one is engaged in that absorption. That is why these mental factors become very powerful. Otherwise, they also exist in the mind, but they are not powerful. Not powerful enough to prevent the mind going to other objects. When they become very powerful, to the extent that they have stabilized the mind on the desired object, the preliminary stage to this stabilization is so-called upachara samadhi. Upachara samadhi differs from the full absorption, from the apana. Full absorption is called apana. The upachara samadhi and apana samadhi are different in the sense that in upachara samadhi, the mind can still fall into the base of consciousness. That means in Theravada system, bhavanga. Bhava means existence, anga means again cause. Same like jhana anga, cause of absorption. Here we have bhava anga, the cause of existence. The cause of existence is nothing else than the consciousness itself. Without consciousness, no existence. Therefore, consciousness is the cause of existence. But which consciousness? Not active consciousness. But consciousness which exists in the moments when there is no active consciousness. That consciousness is called bhavanga, the cause of consciousness. This is to answer the question, where is a mind when it has no object? Mind cannot exist without the object, because a mind is paticca samuppanna dhamma. It is a dhamma, it is a phenomena of existence arisen in interdependent origination. It cannot exist without interdependent origination. This is a peculiarity of Buddhism. You should be very, very clear about that. That's what makes Buddhism different from other systems of philosophy. If you do not understand that, then you will be misled about the meaning of Buddhism. So this mind can exist only then, in cognition can exist only in relation to an object to be cognized. Without object to be cognized, there is no cognition as such. Now, when we do not see any colors, when we do not hear any sound, when we do not smell any order when we do not taste any taste, when we do not touch any tangible, when we do not think any Dhamma, where is the mind? The answer is the mind is in Bhavanga. Because it is in the Bhavanga, therefore, it has a continuity. Therefore, even so, the mind is something which appears and disappears in each and every moment of cognition. Still, it has a continuity, so you cannot say that your mind yesterday was the same mind. You cannot also say that it was a different mind. Neither same nor different. And not only mind, which is the base of all the phenomena we can cognize in this world, all the other dhammas, the feelings, and so on, they also the same. You cannot say they are the same, or you cannot say they are the different. They are simply arisen in interdependent origination. And they are arisen, even so, they are always in the process of change. They are arisen in one single santati, in one single continuity. Which and the one who is responsible for this continuity is nothing else than this Bhavanga we have mentioned. So as long as there is a Bhavanga, there is one single continuity. And why is it so? Because according to the Theravada system, the object of Bhavanga is the same. So the Bhavanga even so it is always changing. It remains, it is always arising and passing away as any other Dhammas. As it is conditioned, it cannot but arise and pass away in each and every moment of cognition. Whatever is conditioned must necessarily do so. There is no option. But in the Theravada system, as this Bhavanga Chitta, being as any other Chitta, it arises in regard to an object. It cannot arise without an object. But it is arising always in regard to a single object. It is called the Chitta Viti Vimuta Chitta. It is liberated from the active process of cognition. All the other chittas appear in the active process of cognition, except Bhavanga. Bhavanga here also implies the last and the first mind of our existence. This mind is also bhavanga. In the beginning of our existence, this bhavanga is called patisandhi. In the end of our existence, this bhavanga is called chuti. And between the beginning of our existence and between the end of our existence, innumerable milliards and milliards and billions of bhavangas appear. But they appear in regard to one object. Therefore, there is continuity. So this is a peculiarity of the Theravada system. For example, if you read Xuanzang's Vigyaptimatrata Siddhi, Cheng Wei Shilun, the Xuanzang, he says among the proofs of the existence of Alaya Vijnana that it exists in all the other, that it exists in other systems. He also mentions the Vaibhajivadins, which are Theravadins. They also consider Bhavanga, which is Bhavanga is for him just another name for Alaya Vijnana. But he does not mention the difference between the concept of Bhavanga and the concept of Alaya Vijnana. As far as Bhavanga is concerned, as far as Alaya is concerned, the object of Alaya is non-manifested and not non-clear. But the object of the Bhavanga, we can know actually the object of Bhavanga. This is a peculiarity of the living tradition of Abhidhamma as preserved in Bhamma. You do not need to learn the supernatural powers. You can analyze the object of Bhavanga by vipassana. The object of Bhavanga in this life is nothing else than the object of the last active cognition in the past life, and the object of our future Bhavanga, if we are going to be reborn, is nothing else than the last object of our active mind in this life. Then, as long as we live in one santati, in one continuity of life, the bhavanga, the basic consciousness, then remains on this very object. It does not go to, cannot go to any other object. It is bound to that object. So, when the active cognition has no object, then our mind is bound to this bhavanga object. is very important to understand. So now the sublime conditions are, sublime cognitions are also the states of active mind of the pavuti citta, pravriti citta. They only differ from the other kamavachara processes, from the processes of cognition in the lower sphere of existence, lower sphere of cognition, in the sense that just as in case of bhavanga mind, when we are in the sublime condition, our mind is also bound to the single object. It does not go to any other object. So this rule becomes similar to the bhavanga mind. The mind in sublime condition does not change object. Just like the mind in the bhavanga cognition. Now we start, we have started last week with the three, with the five jhana angas which we have analyzed. We have said that after the five jhana angas in the living tradition of Abhidhamma comes the so-called faso panchaka dhammas. These faso panchaka dhammas, they stand for the five aggregates of existence. We have explained that last week. So they are the most important mental dhammas. So after analyzing the most prominent mental factors, mental dhammas, factors of cognition, which are the five jhana angas, we have started analyzing the most important mental dhammas which occur, which come to prominence whenever there is a touch. Whenever there is a touch, no need to say, it is a touch with the object. So rupa must be there. So rupa, as soon as the object appears, except the abstract mental concepts, all the other objects belong to the category of rupa. Why they belong to the category of rupa? Because the definition of rupa is rupati rupati iti rupam, because they are being broken in each and every moment of cognition. So it is very important to understand in Buddhism the concept of corporeality, concept of object, is quite different from concept of object in the Western philosophy. The object is that which is broken. Broken by what? Broken by hunger, broken by cold, broken by heat, broken by cold, broken by bites of insects. Very practical. But the most important part of it is broken by understanding. That means if the mind has understanding, if it has concentration, if it has wisdom, just like the perception of the outer mental, outer objects, like this table, like this glass, like the sound I hear in the street, when I concentrate on it and I have a certain knowledge, then it will disintegrate into the rupa, kalapas, into the compounds of cognition, which can be further broken into individual parts, individual objects of cognition. This happens outside just like in inside. Suppose I close my concentration, wisdom is good, I contemplate this glass, then I close my eyes, the glass that will appear in my inner eye can also be broken into this rupa kalapas. It proves that it is nothing else but rupa also. Even the image of Buddha, if I concentrate on it and in my inner eyes, it can be broken into the rupa kalapas, and nothing of its stability will remain. So whenever there is a touch, except in case of the abstract concepts like truth and so on, whatever is the object of touch is something which is necessarily in the process of being broken. This process of being broken of rupa, as we shall see, in our further analysis, I hope we come to it this week or next week, of the analysis of the active cognitions in the kama vachara sphere, in the sphere of cognition dominated by sensual objects, in the cognitions dominated by sensual objects. The impermanence of the rupa in the Theravada system, this is also peculiarity of the Theravada system, which we do not find in other systems. The impermanence of rupa is 17 or 16, depends on the system. Usually 17 in the Visuddhimagga, 17 is accepted. But some works of sub-commentaries like Anandatika and so on, you have 16, because 16 is a very good number in India. Yes, 16, very good number. In Vietnam also. 16 is many, many things in 16s appear in Indian philosophy. But because we will see later when we explain the mental processes, because the past moment of Bhavanga is considered also as a process of active, belonging to active cognition. Therefore, we get, instead of 16, we get 17. But we will talk about it later when you get more knowledge. Otherwise, you will get confused with too many informations. So, the impermanence of rupa in the Theravada system is 17 or 16 times slower than the impermanence of mind. And the reason why we can see a present object, like present colors, present sounds, is because the object of cognition of these objects appears in 17 moments of cognition. So it is interdependent origination. So now we have pointed out that the peculiarity of the cognition in sphere of sublime objects in the Rupa Vachara sphere and Arupa Vachara sphere happens in regards to the same object. So the mind appears and disappears always in regard to the same object. So within, according to the Abhidhamma, within one snap. Very wonderful word, snap. Within one snap. Within one snap, there appears thousands of mind arising and passing away. Thousands, even hundreds and thousands. Very, very, the mind is the fastest moving thing in this world. There is no phenomena in this world moving faster than the mind. Even the electricity is moving like a snail in compare to the mind. So now this fast mover, when it is moving always towards the same object, then it becomes very, very powerful, of course. So that is why the quality of these mental factors, which we have in this mind moving always towards the same object, they also become very sublime. So we start our analysis with these sublime objects and sublime minds. And the sublime mind of the first absorption, we have pointed out its five jhana factors. We have pointed out then the faso panchaka. We have started with faso. Faso we have analyzed. Next came vedana. Vedana we have analyzed. Next came sanya. Sanya we have analyzed. And as next, whenever the touch appears, touch with object appears, after sanya comes what? Comes chetana, will. There is no question of any cognition without the will not being concerned. So the will comes as the third most prominent mental factor and the third aggregate of existence also. It is the aggregate of existence of sankhara. Strictly speaking, the sankhara is usually translated as a will formations. And the most important will formation is a will itself. So strictly speaking, the will stands for sankhara khanda. But in wider sense, the sankhara khanda is will plus all the other mental formations except vedana and sanya. We have last week we have explained why. Because vedana and sanya, the reception of the object and making note of the object, are the most important mental dhammas which determine the nature of our cognition beside the will. And all the other mental factors are determined by will. So the will is also called Kshetra Swami. Ketasami. Ketasami means the lord of the field. It is the lord of the field. Why? Because among the mental factors, it is the most powerful of all. It is compared to the Balava Purisa, the powerful man who leads the other workers in the field, the other mental factors which determine how we experience our object. And what is the lakhana, the characteristic of will? The lakhana of will, of chetana, is very simple. It is only the chetaita. It is only the act of willing. There is no one who is willing. There is the pure, mere act of willing. This is how we experience the will. No one who is willing, but the act of willing. And the act of willing is the necessary cognition of appearance of the cognition. Without the act of willing, there will be no cognition. And the act of willing is also the, so to say, the ore by which the mind goes to the object. If there is no act, this act of willing, the mind will not go to the object. In the lower types of cognition, that means the cognition dominated by sensual objects or the cognition of the first absorption, this act of going to the object is assisted by applied thought, vitaka. We have discussed last week that the taste or the function of vitaka, of the applied thought, is beating the object, repeated striking at the object. Its manifestation is bringing mind to the object, anayana. We have discussed that. Its characteristic is planting mind to the object. We have already discussed that last week. That is also a second or of the mind which takes mind to the object, but which exists only in the lower types of cognition. In the higher types of cognition, because of the higher concentration, the other mental factors are so well coordinated, and the function of sati, manasikara, and these important factors are so powerful that the mind does not need to rely anymore on the applied thought. It goes to the object just in virtue of the better coordination of the other mental factors. That's why the samadhi becomes deeper. So the lakhana, the characteristic of chetana, then is the state of willing. The state of willing is the necessary accompaniment of any cognition. And the we know, we taste this presence of state of willing. How do we taste the presence of the state of willing? What is the function of the will? Ayuhana, the accumulation, karmic accumulation in the mind. The act of willing is becomes functional when there is this karmic accumulation in the mind. Without this karmic accumulation in the mind, the act of willing cannot become functional. So this accumulation, being the taste, how we know there is will in our mind, is nothing else but the effort of the mind. And this effort of the mind can be either wholesome or unwholesome. If it is the wholesome accumulation, becomes most powerful when the mind becomes anenja. In the fifth jhana and in the arupa jhanas, the mind being unmoved by disturbing factors, the eight disturbing factors we have mentioned, Therefore, if it is connected with active, wholesome will, then it is a will for the unmoved mind. This is the most wholesome accumulation in the world. Then the manifestation of the will, when there is accumulation, what happens? Samvidahana, the coordinating. It is by act of willing that one coordinates also. When the act of willing occurs, the coordinating of the other mental factors also occurs automatically with it. How to understand it? Visuddhimagga explains it on the example of the Jeta Sisya. Jeta Sisya means the senior. Sisya means disciple, senior disciple of the carpenter, say. What does the senior disciple of the carpenter, apprentice, senior apprentice? Huh? Disciple is not a good word. In English we have a better word, apprentice. Huh? The senior apprentice of the carpenter, what does he do? He does his own job of making a chair or making the table, but at the same time he sees to it that all the other apprentices, they do their job properly. So he does his own job. That means bringing mind to the object, and he sees to it that all the other apprentices, they also do their job properly. So that there is unity in the mind. That is why the padatthana, the main cause of the appearance of the act of willing, is the existence of the other aggregates of existence. These are like the other apprentices to be guided by the will. I see that our time has already passed. So tomorrow we will continue the rest of the mental factors present in the sublime condition of mind. I hope you will become familiar with them, so that even if you wake up in the middle of the night, you have them on your palm, and you have a clear understanding of that. Okay, so that much for today. We transfer merit for the benefit of all sentient beings. Akasatta chabumattha deva naga mahidika punyang tang anumoditva chiramrakantu lokasasanang. Akasatta chabumattha deva naga mahidika punyang tang anumoditva Chiramrakantu Desanam Akasatta Chavumartha Deva Naga Mahidika Punyantang Anumoditva Chiramrakantu Tumamparam.